Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. Okay, back again. And this is The Turning Point with Mike Fader. We're here every Monday at this hour, live. Sometimes you can hear it on podcasts. I know a lot of you listen on podcasts. Thank you to all the listeners who responded to my request last week to get in touch with me if you listen to the show. As I've mentioned before, recently, I am doing the show from home until PRN sets up its brand new state-of-the-art studios. And it's great to hear from people so you know that you're at least not talking to yourself in the living room, which I do all the time anyhow, but I never do hear from anybody because nobody hears except me. And maybe the neighbors, but they're too polite to say anything. All right, so again, if you are hearing the show either live or on a podcast, get in touch with me. Let me know that you heard the show, what you think of it, what your opinion is about anything I've said. Here's an article. For those of you who've grown up in New York City or who grew up in New York City and you're over the age of, let's say, I don't know, 40 or 50, this may make more sense to you, But it's an article that appeared in the New York section of the New York Times the other day, and the city section. It's about an area near Times Square and about Times Square itself. And if you've come from somewhere else as a tourist, or if you visited New York or you lived here before, you know what Times Square was like, and it changed a lot over the years. But for a long, long time, quite a long time, way up until about 15, 20 years ago, going back maybe, I don't know what, going back, let's say, 120 years, it was a different kind of place. Now it's kind of spruced up and corporatized and touristy, and you could bring your little children there. But once upon a time, it was a place where nobody would go with their little children, and they wouldn't even go by themselves. It was the seediest, scariest, craziest place in New York City. Times Square, right off Times Square, and especially 42nd Street, which was called by the police the Deuce, where more people were arrested. You could get promoted just by walking a beat on the Deuce. Bernard Kerik, remember Bernard Kerik? Anybody remember Bernard Kerik? He was the police commissioner under Rudy Giuliani, Il Duce Giuliani. And before that, he was the corrections commissioner. He made his career on the cops originally on 42nd Street, where there is great availability to chase and apprehend criminals of every sort. Here's an article from, let's see, Thursday, May 14th. A shooting in the seedy, unsanitized back lot of Times Square. Two police officers responded to a 9/11 call of an assault on Wednesday morning. It turned out to be nothing, so they left empty-handed. Emerging from an office building at 580 8th Avenue between 38th and 39th Street. It was a sunny, breezy day on a stretch that can look anything but sunny and breezy. If Disney has taken over Times Square, then 8th Avenue is its sooty back lot. Days like Wednesday, that is just the day before this article came out, are reminders that in a city that can seem sanitized to a blinding sheen, there are still places where anything can happen. A man wearing a hood and a mask walked past the officers at that moment, and they recognized him from a "Be on the Lookout" announcement at roll call earlier that morning. They followed him down 8th Avenue. The suspect had just walked past a liquor store and a peep show, a dying vestige of another era of Times Square that shares a two-block stretch with a pornographic DVD shop and an adult toy store called Excellent Vibes, with a big X in the front. They followed the hooded figure past one of the numerous luggage electronic souvenir stores in Midtown, past a newsstand and the restaurant Walk to Walk, W-O-K to Walk, W-A-L-K. In other words, take out Chinese food. Past a women's clothing store with a full-length bright dress on a mannequin in the window with a price tag of $36. Past two fabric stores and Mike's Shoe Plaza. Across the street, a jewelry store advertised each piece of jewelry for $1. A shoe store has marked every item at $39.99. The street can seem like one big poor door in a neighborhood flanked by wealth. Tourists look lost here, most likely because they really are. Where are the bright lights and the big shows? The map says we're close. In 2000, the stretch was the scene of a notorious police shooting. An off-duty security guard named Patrick M. Dorismond was fatally shot by an undercover officer after another officer had tried to sell him drugs and a fight broke out. One afternoon last week, a full-blown street brawl broke out at the corner of 8th Avenue and 41st Street between warring factions of what appeared to be tour bus workers. Men exchanged wild roundhouse punches, few of which seemed to connect, and ended as suddenly as it began. A few reporters with the New York Times, including this one, the man writing this article, watched from a newsroom window, and then everyone went back to what they were doing. Quote, "There's a methadone clinic in the area," end quote, a salesman at Mike's Shoe Plaza said. "I see a lot of people asleep on their feet, a lot of people talking to themselves, hearing voices. I've seen guys claiming they can oil the gate," he added, pointing to the roll-down security barrier out front. Kind of a squeegee man mentality. Squeegee men were when you were on the west side of New York and you were driving to and from New Jersey, coming out of tunnels or off bridges, especially out of the two tunnels that lead to New Jersey. There were guys who were down and out, you know, who were totally broke and, you know, beyond, below welfare. And they would walk up and clean your windows, even if they didn't need to be cleaned. And you didn't ask for it, and they would just spray stuff on your window and then take a sponge and clean your windows off, usually making them worse, and then kind of aggressively demand that you give them money. On Wednesday morning, the suspect, the hooded suspect, crossed 37th Street, then turned and lunged at one of the officers, Lauren O'Rourke, 27, with a hammer. That was how the officers had recognized him. The suspect was wanted in a string of four attacks with a hammer in the neighborhood this week. Officer O'Rourke's partner, Geraldo Casena, 36, drew his weapon and fired four times, striking the suspect, David Burrill, 30, who dropped into the middle of Eighth Avenue. He was taken to Bellevue Hospital in critical condition. The officers were treated for their injuries. Officer O'Rourke had been hit by the hammer, the police said. The two will be debriefed in the days ahead. The two officers have probably all but forgotten the non-assault that took place immediately before the attack and the shooting. It happened, or it didn't happen, at Paris Fashion Creations Incorporated, a glamorous name for a crowded and busy room of what appeared to be a garment factory on the building's ninth floor. Women were hunched over steaming irons. A man listened to a reporter's questions hours after the shooting. Nothing happened, he said. Yes, the police came. They were here, checked out what they had to check out. Nothing more, he said. It was pointed out that whatever they checked out might have prevented Mr. Burrill from striking someone else with his hammer. At the risk of overthinking things, the officers were standing where they were when they spotted Mr. Burrill because of the assault call. Maybe so, the man said, still refusing to elaborate. In other words, nobody's got nothing to say about nothing. This is a leftover of Times Square. Like I say now, and as the article says, Times Square mostly off to the west of Times Square. Times Square is where there's a lot of, regular theaters, big, massive theaters that were once great theater palaces back in the 30s and 40s, maybe even back in the 20s. Places like where Frank Sinatra sang in his heyday in the 40s and 50s, you know, especially in the 40s, right after the war and during the war and before the war. Big live performances took place there, concerts. These were movie palaces where they originally showed great silent movies. And of course, all the Broadway shows are right off of Times Square. Some very famous restaurants, but Times Square has, or had, and still has now with improved graphics, is even crazier. It was always a kind of crazy, glitzy, materialistic, commercial place, the most commercial place you could possibly imagine. I mean, I'm sure there are other places like this in other cities, but in New York City, it's Times Square, and it's famous all over the world. Certainly a lot of people come to Times Square. Millions of tourists from all over the world and all over the country come to Times Square every year, jamming the place completely and buying tickets to Broadway shows, those that can afford them. There's one sort of low-price place that you can line up for if you want to wait for hours, where you can get tickets for a low cost. But so everybody's familiar with this Times Square if you're a tourist or if you grew up in New York. But it's a kind of a crazy, overwhelming place. It's where, I think people all over the world, or certainly all over the country, all over the United States, watch on New Year's Eve for the ball to drop, and a million people will jam Times Square, which is a lot of people. And Times Square was always, especially where it branched off to the west side of Manhattan. When it branches off to the east side of Manhattan, Times Square is right in the center of Manhattan, basically in the low 40s all the way up to around, the high 40s, right in the middle of Manhattan. And that's where all these, as I say, all these souvenir shops and all these restaurants and all these theaters are. But Times Square, once upon a time, before it was cleaned up about 15 or 20 years ago, and the streets going off to the side of Times Square and the on 8th Avenue, which is the street next over from Broadway, and right around that whole area, were the sinkhole of New York City. The black hole, the seedy under the belly, under the rock place in New York City for a long, 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 long time. I mean, now it's, you know, it's chain restaurants and Disney has taken over. For decades and decades, commercial groups and citizens groups and tourist groups and business organizations had urged the mayor and the city council to clean up this place because it was so full. They wanted to attract more people. They wanted to attract more tourists. And New York makes, I think, maybe one of its biggest industries is tourism, New York City. And certainly Times Square is one of the main attractions, if not the main attraction. And they, you know, they were crazy on the subject of wanting to clean this place up because the whole area was filled with, especially off to the side of Times Square, you know, away, a block, even just a block away or half a block away from where all these big Broadway theaters were and all these fancy restaurants and went, you know, that went along with them. It's just, you know, you walk 200 feet, turn the corner, and there was the worst place in New York City. It was porn theaters and peep shows and, you know, places that had booths with women, you know, doing live shows for men behind glass that would last for, I think you put quarters in, you fed quarters or tokens that you bought into a machine and a curtain would go back. And I've never been in one of them, but, you know, that's what they had there. And they would do sort of like kind of a sex act, and the men in the booths would masturbate. And it was, and there was like a dozen of these places, two dozen of these places. There were, and big porn theaters all up and down 42nd Street between, which is now, like I say, all AMC theaters and Disney stores and I don't know what, Yankee stores, M&M stores, where tourists come, you know, fresh face with their kids from all over the place. But once upon a time, that street and all the streets around it, drugs, you could buy any kind of drug. I mean, any kind of drug, and I'm sure a lot of it was just bogus, crazy, you know, poison. Junkies everywhere, nodding off, you know, beggars of all sorts, people coughing their lungs out with TB, down and out alcoholics, you know, guys who had reached the bottom of the barrel. I mean, absolutely the bottom of the barrel. People throwing up in the sidewalk or onto the curb. Cops patrolling all over the place, but it didn't make any difference. The cops looked like they were just part of the whole scene, like a tapestry of crime and cops, criminals and cops. And flea bag hotels that you could rent by the half hour or something, where and also where people lived, you know, completely infested by rats and by roaches. You're getting the picture, right? I hope you're not eating anything right now or when you listen to this. Greasy spoons, the worst kind of coffee shops, you know, where people hung out and you could buy anything there. You could buy anything. And prostitution, like I say, prostitution of every kind, every sort of person, every color, every sex, every variation of sex, every variation of men and men, women and women, any kind of prostitute you could possibly imagine, child prostitutes. Did you see Taxi Driver? Ever see the movie Taxi Driver? That kind of place, that kind of place. And you could buy anything in this place. You could buy anything in this place. And there were stabbings, and there were muggings, and there were shootings. And although, as I say, the cops were there walking the beat, not just, you know, tooling around in their cars, but actually walking the beat. There were cops all over the place. There was so much crime and so much seediness and sleaziness and badness there, just general badness, that basically, you know, there was stabbings and shootings and muggings all the time. You know, you'd read it in the paper. And like I said, you could buy and sell anything you wanted to there. There were all these stores in the midst of these places. If you've been to New York City as a tourist, or if you work anywhere near Times Square, or you pass through Times Square, you still see some of these stores. A lot of them say going out of business. You know, monster sale, going out of business, lost our lease. Sometimes it became a big joke. I mean, these stores would have these signs in their windows so long that they were actually rolling up and turning yellow. going out of business, lost our lease, have to sacrifice 70, 80% off on all merchandise. Of course, a lot of it was stolen. But this stuff was always there. It was always there. And it seems like it always will be there. It always will be there. It's luggage and cameras and watches and jewelry. And there were pawn shops all over the place, pawn shops where, God knows, where people had, brought people to whatever extremity that they had to pawn off whatever valuables they had, or people who used to pawning things. And people's wedding rings were all in the window. Wedding rings, you could get, watches that were inscribed, on your anniversary, on our anniversary or whatever. It was just a cauldron and a vat of sadness and disappointment. And like I say, all the gifts and souvenir stores. I don't know. I haven't been in that on that street for a long time. I've been around Times Square because I had to pass through it sometimes when I take a bus recently. And when I worked at Sirius Satellite Radio, they are right off Times Square. So sometimes it was hard to get a cab back home, which I tried to get. You try to get away from that place as soon as possible. It's right near the, when you go a little east of Times Square, that's where Radio City Music Hall is. You know, the Rockettes and the Christmas shows. It's just like, I don't know what every other city is. I haven't traveled very much. I have not traveled very much. And I couldn't tell you what the downtown of other cities are like. But New York City is one of these kinds of places. It's Manhattan, I should say. Manhattan is a place that is very, very long and relatively narrow. It's maybe a mile, is it a mile wide? Maybe a mile wide, or maybe 3/4 of a mile wide, the whole borough of Manhattan, the island of Manhattan. And, maybe 3 miles long. No, maybe 4 or 5 miles long. So it's long and it's narrow. And it's laid out in grids. Originally, it was laid out that way. The streets and the avenues are laid out in kind of a grid. It's very hard to get lost in New York City. All the numbers, 48th Street, 49th Street, 14th Street. It's only when you get into certain small areas of the city that are much older, that were settled originally, that the streets are sort of circular or old-fashioned looking. They even might even have cobblestones. But otherwise, all of Manhattan, or most of Manhattan, I should say, is laid out in a grid, and you can walk a block in any direction and be in a completely different world, a completely different world. You can go from, Broadway shows and a fancy, expensive restaurant. You could walk one block over to the west, or you walk one block over to the east. It's the Rockettes, and famous clothing stores, some famous jewelry stores. It's Radio City Music Hall. It's where everybody comes to buy Christmas stuff. You walk one block over to the west, which is where this article is about, where these hammer attacks took place, and where shootings still happen, and where you can buy and sell anything, and there's peep shows. One block to the west of where these Broadway shows are, to Times Square, and it's down and outsville. It's nasty. And it's crazy over there. And everything is for sale, and everybody is for sale. And you do not want to go there. You really don't want to go there, unless you have a reason to go there, unless that's where your employment takes you, or that's where you got lost, or where that's where you were wound up someplace, whether you wanted to, or not, where you sank to, or maybe you just have to pass through it. Although these days, it's getting even more complicated, because this whole area is being gentrified, like everything else in Manhattan. It's hard to find places, to live. And so they're just taking, they once had to drain swamps to make streets in Manhattan. They had to drain morasses and swamps to make streets. Well, so there's still some areas of swamp, but these areas over here are places where you still really wouldn't want to go. It's almost as if, and like I say, 15 to 20 years ago, the pleas of business people and the people who wanted to get more and more tourists and make more money and to get the place cleaned up, because I guess it was too dirty. It was the kind of place you thought of as dirty. In fact, the whole place was filthy. If you walk down 8th Avenue, that the place where this article refers to, you get this feeling of just disgusting, indescribable filth. And all still, there's all these fast food joints, you know, and including McDonald's and everything else. And you could smell, you could walk down this avenue and just smell the grease. On 41st Street, I was going to mention before, that's where the New York State Parole Board had its office. And it couldn't be a more perfect place. It was right across the street, from the Port Authority bus terminal, And that's where, if you were on state parole, where some of the toughest guys, you know, criminals in the state, were placed on parole finally, they had to report there. And it was a perfect place for this kind of thing. Because it's the kind of place, this whole area, that attracted and still does, off to the sides, clearly there are areas remaining, extremes of society. Cops are there, the criminals are there. Both sides of society are there. And as I say, everybody used to be in this place. It was a place for soapbox people to preach. Times Square was also a big recruiting station. During Vietnam, there was a lot of protests, a lot of anti-war protests right in the middle of Times Square, you know, with all the theaters around and all the tourists. A lot of us, and I was there a couple of times, there was this big recruiting station. It's not so big physically, but it's a place that processes a lot of people who want to join, you know, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines. They have a recruiting station there, and this is where we went. And right in the middle of Times Square a lot, and off to the sides, you would get people preaching all kinds of politics and all kinds of crazy religious, the end of the world is at hand. People walking around next to staggering junkies and alcoholics, and people preaching. There was one group called the Black Jews. And it was a bunch of black men, kind of husky, strong-looking black men, dressed up sort of like, I don't know, like they look like extras from an old-fashioned biblical movie. But they also looked very, they were dressed sort of half Arabic and half out of like Ben-Hur, right? They are like Roman soldiers. They had leather, steel-studded or iron-studded leather cross belts, and they wore thick leather vests, and they wore work boots, and they wore turbans. And they would stand there and preach and be, and they would also carry big staffs, you know, big wooden staffs then in their hands, and they were big guys anyhow. So they were a very threatening presence. And I stood and listened to them a couple of times. I mean, I had so many different jobs in my life, and once in a while I would be walking around Times Square. And there were other reasons why I walked around Times Square too, which I may get to in a little while. But I would stop and listen to them. And they were there almost deliberately to provoke people. They would there was about five or six of them that stood, the big guys, stood as guards with these staffs and these threatening looks and their turbans, you know, wound around their head, more like Sikhs turbans. And they had very colorful, you know, different, very like, they're dressed in black and red, and you couldn't help but notice them. And they had one guy who was reading from the Old Testament. And their claim was, they had a microphone. The cops made them take it away once in a while, you know, made them get rid of it. But then they would bring it back the next day. And they were loud enough anyhow, didn't need a microphone. And they would always gather a crowd. Sometimes if you worked in the area, you would go there for entertainment at lunch. Because these guys would stand there, and they were there to deliberately provoke anybody. They said that they were the original actual Jews, and no other Jews in the whole world were genuine Jews except them. Maybe there was a total of 20 of them in the whole world. I really don't know. And this is the kind of people that you would find in this area. And like I say, what's right there where a lot of these things radiate out from, right near where this guy with the hammer was. And they were just plain lunatics walking around this area all the time, too. People who would be talking out loud to themselves, people who were wearing some clothes or some hardly any clothes. And it was just there was always somebody being shoved into a police car or something like that. But there is the Port Authority bus terminal right smack in the middle of this place, the Port Authority bus terminal near the porn theaters. And the pawn shops and the souvenir shops full of hot merchandise or stuff that doesn't work the day after you buy it, right? Charge marked down 90% sale just today only, you know, going out of business tomorrow. Near all of this stuff, there's the Port Authority bus terminal, almost as if it was kind of like the empty heart of this desperately black place. And the Port Authority bus terminal was sleaziness, just the ultimate in sleaziness. And buses coming in from all over the country and leaving from the Port Authority bus terminal to go back all over the country. I mean, it was essentially arrivals and departures, but you could almost call it escapes. People were often, I mean, yeah, the people who came to work every day at the Port Authority bus terminal, they were commuters, and they still are commuters going back and forth from the Port Authority bus terminal. And people who have gone to visit their relatives or gone someplace for the holidays. But there are also people there, and you'd see people hanging around in the bus terminal until the Port Authority cops would rouse them, you know, drive them out back onto the street. And this is one of the problems here, right? In Times Square, if you see anybody like this, if the cops see anybody like this, they say, you know, move it, keep moving, move it over to 8th Avenue. They see you in the bus terminal hanging around, doing obviously, you know, pimps looking around for new prospects or people who or prostitutes or drug addicts or anything. They tell you, just move it out of here. We don't want you in here. Move it out to the avenue. This is what happens. People flush everything. They flush everything. It's got to go somewhere. Where does it all go? They don't evaporate. What was it in Star Trek where they had a on their stun guns or their phasers, whatever they're called, you could actually evaporate somebody? Well, people don't get evaporated. They either get locked up, and the cops don't want to go through the trouble of locking people up. They never want to go through the trouble of locking people up unless it's a major felony arrest, which is good on their record. But, you know, the prostitutes and the pimps and the petty drug addicts and the petty drug deals, you know, this is not something that they want to bother with, all the paperwork. And they have to go to the arraignment. And they have to testify. They don't want any part of it. So they just move them along. And these people walk the streets all over the place. So there's the Port Authority bus terminal. And as I say, aside from the commuters, you know, the regular commuters or people who have been visiting, you know, out of town, their family are coming back, what you get at the Port Authority bus terminal, people escaping to New York from somewhere else, people who can't stand where they live anymore and have just picked up everything. A lot of times you get kids coming in, underage kids, 15, 16, 17. They just scrape together money or they steal money from someplace where they live out in the country. All over the country, and show up at the Port Authority bus terminal. And very often what happens to them, because this is a place, the Port Authority bus terminal, I don't know if it's still this way, but it used to be. Probably it's better patrolled now because of the new cleaner 42nd Street, because all the porn theaters and all those things have been shut down for the Disney stores, and they're right across from the Port Authority bus terminal. But it was a place where kids showed up, and it was a place for predators and victims. Place for predators and victims. And also people were escaping out of there. People would just, leave families or leave their lives in New York or just get fed up, and they would take off. They were gone. They would hop on a bus and say, you know, what's the next bus to any place? But what the bad part was that, and again, think of the movie Taxi Driver, that kids would show up there and never be heard of again or seen again until they were arrested by the cops for prostitution and for shooting up right in some alley someplace. It's a transient place. The place is a transient place. And the Port Authority bus terminal, of course, is transient central. And it's the transients. It's not a neighborhood. It's the transients of the place. The fact that no one actually lives there but is traveling through that creates a kind of moral Bermuda Triangle, where there is no right and wrong, what's moral, what's immoral, what's good, what's bad, sort of ceases to exist, and everything goes, and anything goes. And it can happen because no one actually lives there. There are neighborhoods off to the side. I mean, once upon a time, long, long, long ago, this whole area was, in fact, it was a ghetto. It was a famous ghetto. It was called Hell's Kitchen. And it still has some pretty bad places that haven't been gentrified and fixed up. But it was an Italian ghetto, and then before that was an Irish ghetto, and then they coexisted simultaneously. Some of the, if you remember the Godfather, I don't know if it was the Godfather Part Two or whatever. I don't know, it was probably the Godfather Part Two. If you remember where the young man Vito Corleone lived, it was in Hell's Kitchen. It was a place for immigrants to come in and just survive and make their way up. And later on, for the same for the Irish, and before and after. And some of the toughest, nastiest Irish gangs in New York used to live there. And there's still some leftovers of that place. But as I say, I think it's the Port Authority. There's something about the transience of the area. The fact that you can sort of get away, or you can just show up and anybody can do anything that contributes to this kind of thing. And people who want to change their lives in every way, better or for worse, show up in these places and then disperse or get lost or fall through the cracks. Anything can happen there. Let's go to some music.
Holly came from Miami, FLA. Hitchhiked her way across USA. Plucked her eyebrows on the way. Shaved her legs and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. On the island, in the back room, she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head, even when she was given head. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go doo 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 doo. Little Joe never once gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Alright. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that fast. She said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doo 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 doo. Do 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 do.
Yes, sir. Times Square. Times Square and 8th Avenue. Still, a place where anything goes and where you might want to avoid, unless you're working there in a way, unless you're working there, you know. And I mean, I don't mean working like in an office. I mean, there's plenty of offices around there. There's office buildings. There are a lot of music studio lofts. There are, you know, obviously tens of thousands of people in this area, and most of them have legitimate jobs, but there's still the wild side. There's still the sleazy, dirty side. The sinfulness is there. The badness is there. In fact, once upon a time, I used to spend time there because I was the assistant manager of BAI, radio station BAI, of mixed fame, and it was located at 35th Street and 8th Avenue, which is right smack in that whole area. It's right there. I mean, you walk out the place and you go looking for food, you want something for lunch, or you just walk a couple of blocks up, or maybe if you are looking to get to the subway, whatever, this is where you pass through. You run through this gauntlet. And in fact, WBAI's office building, 505 8th Avenue on 35th Street, was right down the block from where Midtown South Police Station was. One of the largest police precincts in New York City, and I think it's still there. And the police precinct itself is right down from BAI. And it was right smack in the middle of one of the nastiest blocks you could ever possibly imagine. I mean, you know, buildings that were tenements, you know, long, long, long time ago, mostly, and they were Italian and they were Irish, and now it was mostly Puerto Ricans who lived in. This was back a ways when BAI occupied this area. It was in the 70s and the 80s that BAI occupied this area, and it was still an extremely poor place. You know, broken old rusty iron grillwork and twisted in front of these old tenement buildings that were literally falling apart, and that's where the cops were. Well, where else would the cops be? Where else would the cops be? The cops are where the crime is. Cops are where the crime is. I remember once I was walking to the lobby, you know, to go upstairs in the 19th floor of where WBAI was at 505 8th Avenue, and I had a show there once when I first started my first radio show at 505 8th Avenue, and one of my original theme songs at the end of the show was Flight Number 505 by the Rolling Stones, Flight Number 505 by the Rolling Stones. And I'm walking up the block. It was a Sunday morning. Actually, since I was the assistant manager there, I used to come in at different days and different hours and take care of business when I had some privacy and it was quieter at the station. And I'm walking there one Sunday morning. It was a very nice Sunday morning in, I don't know, May or June. And I'm walking down the street and past the police precinct and past all these, you know, rundown buildings. And there's a drunk lying passed out over right next to a garbage can, an old metal, you know, iron garbage can in front of a beat-up building. And two girls were coming down the steps, two Latino girls coming down the steps. One of them was about 12. Clearly, they were sisters. And the other one was about 6 years old. And the 12-year-old has got some garbage, which he's going to throw into a bag of garbage. He's going to throw into the trash can. And there's this drunk, you know, passed out right next to it in front of her house. And she says, "It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood." New York, New York, just like I pictured it, skyscrapers and everything. So anyhow, but I remember being fascinated by that area. I mean, you either avoid it, if you have no reason to be there, if you have no reason to, if you're just passing through or if you work there, that's one thing. But if you have no reason to be there, why would you go down there? Maybe because you have business down there. Maybe you're addicted to something. Maybe there's a morbid fascination with the place. Maybe a morbid fascination with the place. There was a time in my 30s and 40s, I was married then too, when I was addicted to pornography. And I would go to some porn theaters in and around Times Square and on 42nd Street. It was a kind of streak of self-degradation in me, which unfortunately has never passed completely away. But do we ever completely change? I guess we do transcend, and we do rise out of some of our worst habits, if we're lucky and if we worked hard, which a lot of us have, and I know a lot of my listeners have. And I have gone back and forth from time to time. But in those days, there was one addiction I had. It was a porn addiction. And I would go in, and sometimes after work, I would work late at BAI because, you know, it was a job that was 24/7 trying to keep the place alive, raising money, paying bills, dealing with the crazy staff. Get some water here. And I'd come out, it would be at nighttime, and I remember I was married and didn't want to go home. I did not want to go home. This is not to my current wife. This is to one of my ex-wives. I did not want to go home. I was not happy being married. And I can't say it was because there was anything particularly wrong with my wife, although we weren't suited for each other. She wasn't a bad person. We just weren't suited for each other. I just wasn't responsible. I just didn't feel grown up enough to be married. And I felt also, for reasons I could never explain, but maybe people who have been involved in any kind of addiction or on the fringes or in the midst of any kind of crime in their lives, or have been fascinated by a criminal life, by the other side, you know, by the dark side, rather than, to use a kind of a silly phrase, from the dark side rather than the light side, right? Anybody who's been fascinated by the dark side will understand this. I just was drawn, you know, it would be 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, just heating up. That was when a lot of these people were waking up down there on 8th Avenue and Times Square, when business was just getting going, you know, where, and I would walk around there. Now, I never went, I was too fastidious and too afraid and too cautious to go to, go to a prostitute. And I felt like that would be disloyal. But there was a time, and since I came home late all the time, it didn't seem to make that much difference, when I would just start going to porn theaters. A friend took me, an ex-friend actually, you know, took me to visit a porn theater once for my birthday, long, long time ago. And I get hooked by it, almost like, I guess, an alcoholic will repeat his story where they had their first drink, you know, and they were hooked ever afterwards. Well, for a long time, off and on, I was hooked by these porn theaters, and was right next to, right near where BAI was. And I would go into the porn theaters, and you go into a porn theater and you sit very far away from anybody else. The theater may have like a few dozen people in it. There was never a big crowd, right? It's not like going to the Lowe's Cineplex, believe me. And you would go to the, and then there would be this horrible, you know, porn up on the screen, which I found myself addicted to. And you sit very far away from other people. You don't want to be near anybody. And the floors were, how can I put this? You didn't even want to put your feet on the floor. Who knows what had been left on the floor there before. One time I was sitting in a porn theater watching some sleazy porn movie. And do you remember from like high school or if you ever were junior high, when somebody was running a projector, if the film got caught, there was this, you know, heat. If the film got caught in front of the camera, it would actually sort of melt and you could see it melt on the screen, right? It wasn't the screen melting, it was the film melting on the screen. It was very interesting kind of, you know, very interesting artistically, actually. So I'm sitting there once and we're in the dark and people are scurrying around like moles or rats and, you know, you sort of look around and make sure nobody's anywhere near you. You don't want anybody in back of you, in front of you. You know, it's like, yeah. And I'm sitting there, and this is one of the worst porn theaters. It's on 42nd Street amidst all the, and people were making drug deals and the line. There were prostitutes, you know, all kinds of things going on inside the porn theater. And the film slowed down. It does that stuttering thing with. And people started talking like this. And the film obviously got stuck in the projector, and the heat melted the film. It just melted, right? You could see it happening on the screen, right? So they flipped on the lights in the porn theater. It was like flipping on the lights in an apartment that's filled with roaches. You know, all of a sudden, everything was scurrying for the exits. So they said, and there was an announcement. I don't know how they did this. You know, there's an announcement that came from the projector's booth way up in the back saying, "We are going to fix the film soon. Please be patient." Like anybody cared, right? Who knows what anybody was doing there in the first place, right? Maybe they were addicted. You know? And so I walked out into the lobby to get some candy from the vending machine. Just saying this out loud, I'm recalling this now, sort of spontaneously. I'm amazed that I went through this. It was a kind of a self-degradation. It was a hard time for me, I guess. So, I'm buying some candy, and I turn around, and who do I see but one of my fellow colleagues at BAI. Now, here I am, the assistant manager at BAI. I see one of the broadcasters at BAI. And I look at him, and right away he could see I'm humiliated. I felt like I turned red. And the guy, who is the nicest guy in the world, he was such a sweetheart, this guy. His name was Citizen Kafka, his air name. He had a different name, you know. But on the air, he called himself Citizen Kafka. He says, "Don't be embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed." He says, "Are we not men? Are we not men?" He was very literary, this guy, too. And it turns out he was the projector. He had a job as a non-union projector. And this is what he did. He went to work in the porn theater, and meanwhile, this guy's he's reading, philosophy. He's one of the biggest intellects at BAI. But this is the job he had. It was, that was a long time ago. So that was, it was a strange moment in my life. One time, actually, I was walking down the street there. It was about 10 o'clock at night, and a pawn shop was open, till midnight. And I actually bought a gun. I was always fascinated by guns, and I bought a .22 Saturday Night Special. So I understand the attraction, the strange morbid attraction to these sleazy dark things, right? Don't really have it anymore. Too old, been through it, done that, whatever. But now, anyhow, we're back to 42nd Street and Times Square. Like I said, Disney has moved in. And once Disney moves in, this stuff, it's like flipping the lights on, right? The roaches all go scurrying. But where do the roaches go? They don't disappear. Well, a lot of them go over to this area that they were writing about in this article here, which I hold up to the microphone. I'll show you again. There are chain movie theaters, there are famous chain national restaurants, and I was wondering, do all cities, I haven't traveled a lot, I haven't traveled much at all, but I wonder if all really big cities have areas like this. I know there are some places where they regulate this, where there are red light districts, a place like Amsterdam might be interesting. I've never been to Amsterdam, but, marijuana is legal in Amsterdam. I think prostitution is probably legal, too. And in Berlin, I think prostitution is legal. So there are areas where it's not like it's any less sleazy in a way, but it's just a legal business transaction. Or you could just buy the drugs in a, the marijuana in a cafe or in a store or however they do it over in Amsterdam. In the red light districts in some cities in Europe, I know that prostitution is still illegal in every city in New York, as far as I know. I don't know. Is prostitution illegal in Nevada, in Las Vegas? I had this vague feeling that I read somewhere that prostitution is not illegal in Nevada, maybe not in the state of Nevada. There's a lot of Mormons there. There's a lot of regular people who live there, regular people. But maybe in the city limits of Las Vegas or in Reno, I don't know. But these places where people congregate, it's kind of the extremes of society. The extremes of society when you get to a place like this. This area, Times Square and where 42nd Street used to be, this the worst place in New York, where the seediest, saddest place in New York, where people got lost and people were predators and victims, where people were addicted and dropped in there. it's kind of a mocking reflection of capitalism, like a picture of Dorian Gray. You know that great Oscar Wilde story where there's this young, beautiful man, you know, Oscar Wilde being gay, this young, beautiful man who, as the years went by, stayed beautiful, like a young, beautiful man. And it was absurd because people were getting older and older and older, and all his friends got older and sicker and lines on their face. And he involved himself in there was something like supernatural about him. He involved himself in every kind of degradation. You know, he was a drug addict. He was vile and nasty to people. He broke people's hearts. He was involved in all kinds of sexual activities. And other people, anybody around him got hurt. But he stayed sort of young and beautiful and untouched. But there was a portrait that somebody had painted of him many, many years ago when he was actually young. The portrait painter himself was now old. And this picture hung up in the hallway, up in the attic. And it was a picture of him, the portrait aged as he stayed young. And the portrait was this venal, nasty, disgusting, old, horrible man. And this was Dorian Gray's soul. This was his soul. And that's what this place is like. To me, this is kind of like a mocking reflection of capitalism. You know, all these bright, wonderful Disney stores with this overpriced crap that people buy, that people spend their money on, all these restaurants and everybody smiling and all these commercials, you know, you're going to love it. You know, McDonald's World, Ronald McDonald, all this kind of stuff, all these things, all these stores, Mickey Mouse and all the other things that people buy, the T-shirts for $50 or $100. What happens over on 8th Avenue, where everything also is for sale, but on a lower, nastier level, to me is a kind of a, like I say, a mocking reflection of capitalism. And the extremes of society congregate in these places because of the transience. There's always bus terminals near here. There's something about the transience of it. And so you get the cops and the criminals are attracted to each other. I remember Women Against Pornography used to spend, they had an office there. There was this group called Women Against Pornography. And they set up an office. Of course, where else would they set it up? But right where all the porn theaters were. Why set it up uptown where there was no porn? So these places attract each other. The church was there. There are churches all over the place, missionaries. You know, to convert the sinners, you know, remember Guys and Dolls, you know, the Salvation Army, to convert the sinners. So these places exist. And I wonder if they're always there in every big city. And I wonder if they're always connected to this transience where there's a bus terminal or a place where people come and go, where nobody has to be responsible for what they do and anything can happen. Okay. See you next week.